This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. Carson McCullers is one of those novelists who was a much bigger deal alive than she was dead. And that's maybe partly because the living McCullers was such an unusual person in 1940s and 50s America. She grew up in Georgia, and at 22 in 1940, her first novel became a huge bestseller, The Heart is a Lonely Hunter. She was compared to Tennessee Williams and Flannery O'Connor. She drank prodigiously, married, she had affairs with women. She seemed to enjoy being infamous, but she suffered from serious health problems all her life and died at 50. Her fiction chronicles misfits and outsiders, whom she wrote about in her lyrical, very southern way.
All day there is the sound of the picks striking into the clay earth, hard sunlight, the smell of sweat. And every day there is music. One dark voice will start a phrase, half sung and like a question. And after a moment another voice will join in. Soon the whole gang will be singing. The voices are dark in the golden glare, the music intricately blended, both somber and joyful. The music will swell until at last it seems that the sound does not come from the 12 men on the gang, but from the earth itself or the wide sky. It is music that causes the heart to broaden and the listener to grow cold with ecstasy and fright. Then slowly the music will sink down until at last there remains one lonely voice, then a great hoarse breath, the sun, the sound of the picks in the silence.
That is from The Ballad of the Sad Cafe, read by the singer-songwriter Suzanne Vega. She is probably best known for a couple of hit pop songs in the 1980s. Remember Tom's Diner and Luca? Well, now she has added a second career branch, theater person. She has created and stars in a lovely new one-woman musical play called Carson McCullers Talks About Love.
New York is my destination. New York is where I will be from. New York is made for grander things just like me. I will lunch at the Algonquin, swing by the plaza, waltz on in the Three Olds Club. I'll live there indefinitely. 'Cause New York is made for grander things.
Paparazzi, well, could this be Glitterati?
That is Suzanne Vega singing New York is My Destination from her one-woman show, Carson McCullers Talks About Love, with music co-written with Duncan Sheik. I guess in some ways the most surprising thing, in addition to the fact that it wasn't just you singing 14 songs, is that you act, and you act really well. How hard is it for you?
Well, I feel I know her. I feel that I inhabit her physically. It's technically hard because of how I hold my body. If you look at the photographs, you can see that for a lot of her life, she was paralyzed on the left side of her body. So I hold my body a certain way. I hold my hand a certain way. And so at the end of the week, I feel it in my back. I feel it in my neck.
Beyond the peculiarities of inhabiting her,
yeah.
You haven't been an actor. You haven't learned lines. You don't know where to...
No.
all that stuff. I mean, that would be so terrifying.
Well, I didn't know it was terrifying until about 4 weeks ago when I was suddenly confronted with the script that I'd spent a year and a half writing. And then suddenly I had to let go of that part of my brain that wants to write the script, and I had to learn the script. So that was the difficult part, was twirling myself around and saying, okay, let go of the playwriting part of it and just take the direction, do what you're told
right.
to do, move from here to there, get there on time, learn the lines. That's been probably one of the more difficult things, is learning 90 minutes of lyrics and also the lines. But I know them now, okay? I do.
Yes. It's now more than half your life, most of your life, that you have been interested, if not obsessed, with Carson McCullers. Tell the story of how you discovered her as a kid.
When I was at Barnard, I was given an assignment by my teacher, Shirley Kaplan. She said, come in dressed as someone in the arts who is no longer living. Be prepared to take questions. So I bought the book. I dressed as her. I learned about her life, and then I read all of her material. So I wouldn't say I've been obsessed with it, but...
But you've kind of been working on this for 30 years.
Yeah, I have, yeah. I've put her away for big chunks of time. There were times where I had to put her away because she becomes all-consuming. She was a needy person in real life and continues beyond the grave to pull people in to her energy and her life story.
A song you wrote and performed as a hit, Tom's Diner, had this second life, again, as a huge hit for various musicians who covered and remixed it.
Yeah.
It's kind of what you're doing with Carson McCullers, sort of covering and remixing and reintroducing her to a world.
Yeah, I guess I am. I'm reinterpreting certain things. Hopefully I haven't gone too far afield of what her spirit is. I feel in some ways, although she was eccentric, she was kind of classic in her work. She wasn't like Gertrude Stein, avant-garde and using language in crazy ways. I feel that she was kind of a classicist with a huge twist.
Right.
A twisted classicist.
Duncan, you also, like Suzanne, were a singer-songwriter with a huge hit record in your 20s and then made the shift very successfully to musical theater with Spring Awakening. And in fact, I saw you referred recently by a critic as the Spring Awakening composer, Duncan Sheik, as if your previous career didn't exist. How does that feel?
Well, you know, see, when I come here to the radio station, I don't have to play guitar. I don't have to play piano. I don't have to sing. I'm a composer.
That's right, Duncan. All he has to do is hear the oboes.
But, I mean, it must be, obviously, you've had great success in this career change, but to have the other one kind of erased occasionally, it must be a little odd.
I mean hopefully it's not erased. You know, I have a record coming out in June, but yeah, the theater is great because it's after, you know, 15 years of like singing songs with your guitar about like the girl who broke up with you or whatever, it gets really boring. It's nice to like write music about other people and inhabit other personalities and other personas. That's kind of a lot more
yeah.
fun in a way.
Well, I still love Barely Breathing.
Okay, well, thanks.
So when we share bills together, as we sometimes do, I am backstage singing and dancing around when he does Barely Breathing.
That's cute.
Yes, thanks.
So how did this process work? You would write lyrics and he would write music, or both? Or?
Actually, I would give Suzanne music.
He would give me between 2 minutes and 5 minutes of either, say, 2 minutes of something that was improvised, which I would then put the lyrics into it. The song we just heard, Duncan gave me the whole thing.
First?
Yeah, he gave me the melody.
But did you start saying, I'm going to do this song about how I dream of New York, and then you would write music?
Yeah, I mean, in that case of that song, I was kind of thinking about, like, coming to New York City in the 40s and 50s and, I don't know, like Peter Duchin Orchestra or something. You know, like kind of vibe.
It was very mid-century.
Yeah, this thing of like, oh, it's full of hope and possibility and lightness, which
and
is
you had the
not...
title. You had the title. Had New the York title. Is My Destination. Yeah. And so I could feel in the melody that you'd given me, da 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 and yeah. That is, New York is my destination. It's like right there. And it, but it was what you had given me was almost like a Morse code, and I had to fit these short phrases.
Uh-huh. It's the easy. That's the easy job, though. Actually, I have to say, it's
for really, you,
it's,
maybe.
No, it's great. No,
not
it's
for
like,
me.
It's great because it's like give me something that evokes this, you know, and then I can just say.
And he just did.
We all need a person like you, I think, in our respective fields. One of my favorite songs of the night is called Harper Lee, about the still living author of To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yes.
Will you play and sing it?
Sure, I would love to. And that goes for you too, Miss Harper Lee. Virginia Woolf, she leaves me cold. I recognize the genius, but I'm twice as bold. I have more to say. And Hemingway, Lord knows, compared to Faulkner, I say it in a better way. Graham Greene, he loves me. He loves my poetic sensibility. Catherine Ann Porter might be the best one now, but in about a year, I'm gonna show her how. Yes, I will. Marcel Proust goes on and on and on for seven volumes. Harper, Harper, Lee, Lee, Lee. She only wrote the one book. I've written more than three. Darling Tennessee Williams, it's anybody's guess why a streetcar made millions and weddings so much less.
And that is Suzanne Vega singing Harper Lee from her show Carson McCullers Talks About Love with music co-written with Duncan Sheik. I love that song. I could I want to put that on my rotation and play it all the time. I especially love she only wrote the one book.
Which is true.
Which is true. But the one book
is
the kind of Midwestern or the provincial construction I grew up hearing my aunts say all around me all the time. Was she that arrogant? I mean, to say it's better than Gatsby, I'm better than Faulkner.
Well, I'll tell you the actual lines. She definitely said, she said she had more to say than Hemingway and that she said it better than Faulkner. Those are actual verbatim quotes.
Uh-huh.
The final line, which is that she'd like to kill more than just that mockingbird, actually came from Duncan, which I thought was terribly witty, and I stole it and put it right at the end.
No, and as a late reveal for those who don't know who Harper Lee is, it was lovely.
Thanks.
It's my one contribution.
Speaking of lovely contributions, could you introduce the band, including your pianist who is a performer in the show?
Yes, he is, Mr. Joe Iconis on piano. And we have Andy Stack on guitar, banjo, harmonium, and ukulele.
Suzanne, so you started reading Carson McCullers when you were a teenager and then in college.
Mm-hmm.
How was reading her and thinking about her and then all that her life was and meant different at 50 and 51 than it was at 20 and 21?
I kind of get it more. She doesn't seem quite as crazy to me now as she did when I was 20.
That's interesting. Well, when you were 20, you hadn't had your great successes in your 20s yet either, right?
I hadn't.
And that must have provided some sense of kinship now.
Only in retrospect. In retrospect,
yes.
I realize now, I had my record deal at 24. So, I mean, her life was incredibly difficult. So it's not a life you want to have a lot of parallels to be honest. But yeah, there have been some.
As you've described, Carson McCullers experienced tremendous personal difficulty. She drank a lot. She had strokes.
Yeah.
She was an invalid at 30. Her husband committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a danger, do you think, in kind of over-investing in the romantic idea that important artists have to experience terrible personal pain and disaster?
That's an interesting question. I hadn't thought of that exactly. But the thing that you can point to is, A, she had the courage of her convictions and of her vision. She was very idiosyncratic, and she was not shy about expressing that fully in all her work. And she might not have lived a healthy lifestyle, but she certainly expressed herself to the fullest. And she was very, very disciplined. She wrote every morning. Didn't matter if she was up drinking all night. And the other thing that I so admire about her is when you read her books, you don't feel pity for her. And when you read her biographies, you don't feel pity. You don't feel this was a pitiful woman.
Suzanne Vega, Duncan Sheik, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Carson McCullers Talks About Love is at the Rattlestick Playwrights Theater in New York City through June 5th. You can watch Suzanne Vega perform another song from the show for us at studio360.org, where you can also download our free podcast, sign up for our newsletter, and just spend all day hanging around.